This is the time set for argument in State Department of Public Safety versus NERI. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you please tell us how much time you want for to reserve for rebuttal?
3 minutes.
Very well. Thank you.
So good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Kathleen Brady. I'm a Deputy Attorney General, and I'm here on behalf of the Department of Public Safety. This case is about Mr. Neary's success in having the district court blend two disparate statutory schemes in order to grant him relief based in equity. However, equity cannot apply in this case. There are two statutory schemes. Either Megan's Law or Adam Walsh Act must apply, and under either statutory scheme, Mr. Neary is not eligible to be relieved from his obligations to register as a sex offender.
Ms. Brady, could I ask you this? As I'm sure you know, we recently decided a case called Martin versus State of Nevada, case number 71806. It was the three of us were the panel on that case. In your opinion, is that case applicable? If it is, tell me why. If it's not, tell me why as well. And I'd ask the same question to your opposing counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I believe the case is applicable. In that case, we had actually, when we were appealing, we tied these cases together. We're actually the same attorneys from both cases as well. But I believe the case is applicable because it explicitly states that Adam Walsh Act was enacted in order to replace Megan's Law. And I think that that statement in that case is pertinent to this case. Obviously, the factual scenarios of each case are different, but the case is also similar in that neither Mr. Neary nor Mr. Martin were eligible for relief from the obligations to register as a sex offender under either Megan's Law or Adam Walsh. Okay.
So they required the same kind of patchwork of a piece from one act and a piece from the other for this to work for them.
In this case, Your Honor, that's what happened. In the Martin case, that was attempted, but the district court rejected applying the two statutory schemes piecemeal. So we have cases on both ends, one where the statutory schemes were merged and one where they were not.
Okay. And that was up to the district court. It was two different district courts holding differently, but the person seeking the relief wanted essentially the same thing, which was to be tiered under one, but relieved under another.
That's correct, Your Honor. So while it's argued that the doctrine of equitable estoppel applies, or judicial estoppel applies in this case, that doctrine does not apply here because it only applies when there's an attempt to sabotage the judicial process, and that did not happen in this case. DPS was acting in good faith at a time when the laws were in flux and when there were competing interpretations as to which laws should be applied. The position that DPS has taken in this case is what the law requires. Adam Walsh Act was enacted to replace, not overlap, Megan's Law. The two statutory schemes cannot be commingled because if the court were to allow that to happen, it would give an unintended benefit that the legislature did not contemplate. In enacting both statutory schemes, the legislature enacted two different tiering statutes and two different relief statutes, and they were only intended to work with the particular relief and tiering statute in the corresponding act.
What do you say to their equal protection argument and their position? And I understand that was raised for the first time on appeal. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But they're making the point that the state has not held true to the principle you just articulated, and that for some individuals, they've been allowed to mix and match like that. And that's of concern.
I understand, Your Honor. So when the court lifted the injunction in January, DPS was in the process of doing cistern modernization, and they also needed time to ensure that the individuals were re-tiered correctly and then give them time to do an internal appeal if they didn't believe that their new tiering under Adam Walsh Act was correct. So while they were doing that process, they were also in good faith issuing certifications of record with tiering designations on them, which they later discovered which were being applied to petitions for relief under Megan's Law and under Adam Walsh Act, regardless of what tier the tier was actually designed to be, was regardless of which tier the designation was actually for, if it was an Adam Walsh Act Tier 1 or Megan's Law Tier 1. they were using them interchangeably. So that led to inconsistent positions and decisions across the state. Some people thought that Adam Walsh was still in effect after it was enjoined by this court on January 22nd, and that's actually still a problem to this day. There are still courts still applying Adam Walsh to their cases. And then some people realized that Megan's Law was going to stay in effect until Adam Walsh could be implemented, and others didn't realize that the tiering designations were. While they were stated as being the same thing, there were different tiering designations for either statutory scheme.
Are there others situated, as Mr. Neary is, that have obtained relief from registration?
It's my understanding that that is correct. So one has to recognize there were district attorneys and attorney generals across the state handling these cases in various courts, and the various laws were being applied in different manners. So there is no one consistent approach that was taken, but the approach that I'm arguing for here is the approach that's supported by the law.
And how long, and you're saying that inconsistency has endured to this day, or did it stop?
The inconsistency, well, I can't speak to what the DAs are doing in their cases.
Yeah.
They do handle the majority of these cases because usually they're filed in the criminal case.
What does our record show, I guess, would be a more...
Our record shows that there's one case where the Attorney General's office allowed the use of Megan's Law tiering with the Adam Walsh Act statute. But that was not the consistent approach by the Attorney General's office. So the issue in this case is whether the district court erred in relieving Mr. Neary from his statutory obligations to register as a sex offender. As I said before, DPS is bringing this appeal because under either Megan's Law or Adam Walsh Act, Mr. Neary is not qualified and not eligible to be relieved from his obligations to register as a sex offender. It's undisputed that he's a Tier 1 offender under Megan's Law and a Tier 2 offender under the Adam Walsh Act. It's also undisputed that as a Tier 2 offender under the Adam Walsh Act, he's required to register for 25 years, and he has only registered for 22 of those 25 years. So because he has not met the durational requirement of Adam Walsh Act, he's not entitled to be relieved from his obligations to register under the Adam Walsh Act. And it's also undisputed that he is not eligible for relief under Megan's Law.
Is it true, and I'm looking at footnote 4 in the respondent's answering brief, they say that he is, given the district court's order granting his petition to terminate, Mr. Neary is no longer classified as an offender subject to registration. So is he registered now or not? Was the order stayed? Do we know?
The order was not stayed in this case. So as far as I know, and Ms. Shell can confirm this, Mr. Neary is currently not registered pending this appeal. But should he be required to register, the sex offender registry has kept all the information. They just have not made it public. So it's just a matter.
Has he given up ground, though, as a result of this confusion? In other words, because some of these statutes seem to say continuous registration.
I don't believe that the state would hold that against him because of the legal proceedings in this case. My understanding is the sex offender registry would count this as being continuous registration once he hits the 25-year period under Adam Walsh.
Because that seems to me would be terribly unfair.
Right, exactly. And the goal of the sex offender registry is not to be unfair. The reason why we brought this case is because we think it's important to have these decisions applied consistently across the state, and we believe that you're in a position to make that happen. So in an attempt to circumvent the statutory language, Mr. Neary argues that his Megan's Law tiering applies to the Adam Walsh Act version of the statute. He first argues that his tiering never changed, but his tiering actually did change. He was notified on June 1st that his tiering would change under the Adam Walsh Act when it was implemented on July 1st in order to give him time to appeal that new tiering designation. And his tiering actually did in fact change in the early morning of July 1st, when DPS implemented Adam Walsh Act for a few hours before this court issued its injunction. So his tier level did change. He also seems to be contending that while the Adam Walsh Act version of the relief statute hadn't been implemented, it should be used. But because the tiering statute for Adam Walsh hadn't been implemented, it couldn't be used. So he's arguing two mutually exclusive alternatives, which...
Ms. Brady, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just to make sure I don't forget this point now. Judge Freeman addressed this, but the record, I guess, reflected Mr. Neary tried to file this petition on June 30th. For some reason, it didn't take up in the 2nd District, and it wasn't filed the next day. How do we deal with that? Should that be held against him? I know you're saying it doesn't matter either way, but what's your thoughts on that? Do we have any discretion on that or not?
So the DPS didn't raise this as an argument below just because under either law, Mr. Neary's not eligible for relief.
Okay.
I think it's up to this court if it wants to apply equity in those circumstances, and it depends on whether or not the statutes need to be jurisdictional.
Okay, thank you.
So, as this court has explained in Finger versus State, enforcement of one provision of an act without another would create unintended consequences that would frustrate the very object of the act. And so I want to briefly address the two arguments that were raised by Mr. Neary. He argues that the equitable doctrine of judicial estoppel applies in this case. He cites to one case to do so, and that's the extent of the record in this case. However, the equitable doctrine of judicial estoppel doesn't apply here. It only applies when an inconsistent position arises from intentional wrongdoing or an attempt to attain an unfair advantage. Judicial exclusion doesn't preclude changes in position that weren't intended to sabotage the judicial process or where differing positions were taken as a result of mistake. I wanted to point out that there's no evidence here that the state intended to sabotage the judicial process. And I also wanted to make this court aware that when one looks to find out what the current status of the sex offender laws is in the state, neither Westlaw nor the legislative Nevada Law Library websites indicate that the statutes are enjoined. The only way that one can find that the statutes are enjoined is if they know to click on the link entitled Available in the Law Library. Certain laws that replace provisions enjoined from enforcement in Does 1 through 17 versus 8th Judicial District Court. And so I think getting to Justice Pickering's point, I think that's part of the reason why there has been some confusion in these cases. Do you have any more questions for me?
Could you address legally the equal protection argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Assuming we reach it at all. I mean,
okay. So even assuming Mr. Neary were treated differently than other sex offenders who were petitioning for relief, DPS had an entirely rational basis for doing so. It would be entirely irrational for DPS to misapply the law. And these two statutory schemes, as I discussed before, are mutually exclusive. They were designed to work with each other. They were not designed to intermix or intermingle or commingle. So based on that, it's DPS's position that Mr. Neary is not eligible to seek the relief that he sought under either Megan's Law or Adam Walsh Act version of the sex offender statutes, and accordingly respectfully request this court.
But Ms. Brady, I'm just trying to understand. I get confused by the facts here. In the one case that you acknowledge, the department confused the two statutes. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. But you're saying that does this record show that was the product of this classification problem that you were trying to address once the injunction came off, or?
The record in this case is limited, Your Honor.
Doesn't really show why that occurred, does it?
No, it does not.
Yeah.
Which may be a reason not to reach it on an equal protection race for the first time on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a clear record on that.
I would agree, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Your Honor. Selena Shell on behalf of Respondent Jason Neary. And, Your Honor, I would just first like to address the issue regarding whether Mr. Neary raised equal protection below. And I would point the court to the record at Joint Appendix pages 70 through 71. That is Mr. Neary's reply to the state's opposition to the petition to terminate registration. And at pages 70 to 71, Mr. Neary specifically said that the state could not treat him differently than other similarly situated petitioners. Now, while Mr. Neary did not use the magical words equal protection, that's precisely what equal protection protects against,
right?
Dissimilar treatment under the same law.
But that was raised in reply, not in the petition?
It was raised in the reply, Your Honor, because as the record, albeit a limited record, reflects, I had represented, prior to filing Mr. Neary's petition in the Second Judicial District, I had represented 8 petitioners who were similarly situated against the same Department of Public Safety with the same issue. They were designated as Tier 1 registrants under the Megan's Law version and were set to be redesignated as Tier 2 under AB 579. But I would say that none of these people were ever redesignated, so the state properly treated them pursuant to their designation, but applied the AB 579 termination process.
You're saying the record shows there were 8 of them, or one of them in this case? I understand you represented 8, but the record in this case shows how many?
The record in this case I provided, and that actually was not a case where I was counsel, that was a separate case.
Sure.
That is one case.
Okay.
If Your Honor would like, I could supplement with records from the other cases of which Your Honor.
No, but I'm just trying to understand the record in this case.
Yes, Your Honor, and I admit the confusion is a bit of my own making, because all of this litigation regarding the DOES is all coming out of my office. So the district court here did not abuse its discretion in applying AB 579 procedure to Mr. Neary's petition. At the time,
why is that an abuse of discretion rather than a legal error standard that we would review it on?
Your Honor, and I believe, and unfortunately I was not able to locate the precise case, but typically when you're looking at an application of facts, the application of facts operates under an abuse of discretion standard. And here I think there's not a mistake of law. There's no mistake of law. He was applying the facts of Mr. Neary's petition, which was he had been registered for the requisite amount of time under AB 579. He had not committed any new offenses. He demonstrated he wasn't a risk to public safety. And he'd shown over 15 years of consecutive
registration. I credit you that the findings, assuming AB 579 applied, those findings would be findings of fact to which I'd defer. But the legal proposition that I would take one statute, call him Tier 1 under Megan's Law, and then apply the analytics from another statute, AB 579, strikes me as a legal proposition. Can I do that legally? And that would be reviewed de novo rather than deferentially, wouldn't it?
I believe so, Your Honor. Yes. However, I would say that the court acted exactly right. I think that the court in this case did exactly the right thing, because Mr. Neary, at the time that he submitted his petition, was a Tier 1 offender. He had not been redesignated, and even if there was this brief window of time on July 1st, 2016, where the state started moving people over, that had to end at 8 o'clock when this court entered the injunction in the Doe's versus Laxalt case. As to the arguments regarding, and I want to address Justice Gibbons' question regarding whether Martin is controlling in this case. And I would say that Martin is not controlling in this case. And it goes to exactly what Justice Pickering was asking about in terms of Mr. Neary's current status. The judge in this court, this case, entered the order on February 8th of 2017. On January 23rd, and this is not reflected in the record, Your Honor, but I do not believe Ms. Brady will disagree with me, that on February 23rd of 2018, the Nevada Sex Offender Registry issued a letter to Mr. Neary saying, we have reviewed the order dated February 8th. You are now terminated from registration. So what makes this different from Martin is Mr. Neary has now been off of registration for over a year. And there are the real questions about what the possible ramifications of having this gap in registration is. Under AB 579, if that law ever goes into effect, it would be 25 years of consecutive registration. He had about 22 years up until the entry of this order. Now, although the state has represented today that she doesn't think that something different is going to happen, I don't know that for sure, and neither does my client. And he's put in, as I said, 22 years of proven consecutive registration. And I think that's why Martin is not controlling here, because we're now at a place where Mr. Neary has benefited and has expected this benefit of having this petition granted and being freed from the yoke of registration. And now we take it away from him, and we're going to be faced with the real practical consequences that no one has had to address before. And quite frankly, this procedural and factual situation we're in is the result of the state's own position in the prior cases that, for the example that I submitted in at pages, at page 77 of the joint appendix with the opposition filed in the other case, and in the eight cases where I represented clients prior to the enactment and then repeal, the pullback on AB 579, they created this position where they were treating people consistent with their pre-AB 579 designations, but applying the AB 579 procedure.
By what, and this is sort of off the wall, but by what authority did the state simply suspend 579's applicability once the injunction was lifted?
Your Honor, I don't have an insight into what was going on at the Attorney General Department of Public Safety's office. I just know that's the position that they were
taking. I understand the efficiency, and they had to get everybody re-tiered. I'd never heard that as a verb before, but either a statute applies or it doesn't apply. I was puzzled by that.
And, Your Honor, I just unfortunately can't have an explanation. I don't have an explanation for why the state took that position. It is a good question, but it is a position that they consistently took, at least in the 8th Judicial District Court, that this was going on. Of course, now that the law is suspended pending this court's review, I've proceeded under Megan's Law with petitions.
You agree with your colleague, though, that purely under Megan's Law or purely under AB 579, your client loses, right?
I can't disagree with that, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay.
He hasn't met, although he has registered in Nevada for, I believe, it was 12 years at the time of petitioning. That would not meet the 25-year requirement under Megan's Law. Actually, I apologize, Your Honor. Under Megan's Law, it's 15 years of consecutive registration in Nevada. Under AB 579, he would be Tier 2, so it would be 25 years of consecutive registration in any jurisdiction.
Right. So he meets neither as a purist. I mean, if I just look at it under Megan's Law, he doesn't meet it. And if I look at it just under AB 579, he doesn't meet it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But it's this gap period that is creating it.
I apologize for interrupting.
No, I apologize for interrupting you.
Yes, and the other thing that distinguishes this from Martin, because we talked about Martin a little bit, another one of my cases, is that Martin would not have been eligible under Megan's Law to petition to terminate because he had two convictions, both involving a minor. Now, Mr. Neary, in this case, had two convictions from 1990, but only one of them involved a minor. So under Megan's Law, he's
not. Do we know that? I couldn't tell from the record whether he was exactly like Mr. Martin or.
He is not, and I believe, Your Honor, if I may just grab my record.
Yes.
This is a topic of conversation during the hearing on the petition in January of last year, and the court asked me about that, and it's my understanding, based on the review of the record and looking at his documentation from California and from the Department of Public Safety, is that his conviction, one of the convictions involved a minor, but one did not. And I apologize. I don't.
It sounded very similar to, one was indecent exposure and the other was attempted oral copulation, and I thought they were both with a minor, but I think...
No, only one of them was, Your Honor, and I apologize. I know that that was something that was discussed during the hearing, but unfortunately I can't find it right off the top of my head. If you wanted me to submit a letter to the court later clarifying where that is in the record, I could. Now, to address the equal protection claim, and once more, Your Honors, we did raise that, although not using the precise language equal protection. We did talk about similarly situated petitioners being treated the same. And the state here has provided really no rational basis for why, in so many of the other cases that came before it, where it was opposing, where it was asked to provide a position to the court about whether someone was eligible for termination, there's no reason why in those cases they applied this hybrid procedure, but in this case, they're doing something different. And it seems almost outcome determinative if they think that, well, we don't want you to get off of registration, then they're going to apply it in a way that seems more favorable to that position.
But you agree that in this record we only know of one other case where there was a hybrid?
That's correct, Your Honor. But I will represent again, and to clarify something that Ms. Brady said about the procedure for petitioning to terminate registration. So from a practical perspective, it is always the state responding. So even in a situation where I have a client who has a conviction from Nevada, and I file a petition to terminate into the criminal case, it is the state of Nevada Department of Public Safety AG who is always handling the responses to the petitions. That's just, the DA does not intercede in those cases. So it's always the state that is providing the position regarding whether someone is eligible or not eligible to terminate. Did your honors have any further questions?
I do, and maybe this sounds like this does go outside the record, but I'm concerned about Mr. Neary's circumstance where there's been this gap in registration, and I recognize that the issue about the effect of that gap, were he not to prevail here, is outside the scope of this case, this particular matter. Are there other people in Nevada, to your knowledge, who receive relief and find themselves in a similar situation where they were relieved of the duty to register, but there's an issue outstanding as to whether the statutes were commingled to arrive at that result?
Your Honor, this is the only case that I'm aware of, and I've done, as I've indicated in my briefing, I did 8 petitions during that interstitial period, and since then I've done several other petitions, all operating under Megan's Law. But no, this is really an anomaly. And I am concerned for Mr. Neary, because assuming that AB 579 goes into effect, he would be designated as a Tier 2 offender. And as Your Honors know, Tier 2 offenders under the AB 579 registration scheme are subjected to several additional requirements that a Tier 1 offender, which is what Mr. Neary had been for his entire time on registration, aren't subjected to. They're listed on a website. They are required to submit to greater verifications. They have more verification requirements. And he's really exposed in a way that he would not have been under Tier 1 to potential ridicule, shaming, and ostracism from being ostracized from the community based on a conviction that it came from 1990.
So let me
and
ask you this.
And he was 17 years old at the time.
At the time of one of the offenses, there was this, I don't have an explanation for why there was an offense that was committed in 1985 and then one in 1989, and somehow they were bundled together.
I realize that the parties didn't raise an issue about the judge's decision to allow to undertake an analysis on the July 1st filing date versus June 30th filing date. But if this court were to resolve this case and say that the court should have evaluated this based upon the law in effect on July 1, and it applied Megan's law rather than AB 579, then Mr. Neary would have another year or two of registration as a Tier 1 registrant. Isn't that correct?
It would actually be a... Well, Your Honor, it would depend, and I know I'm going over, so I'll try
That's
and keep
fine.
It brief.
Please, Justice Hardesty asked you the question.
So if AB 579 were to go into effect, he would be a Tier 2 registrant and subject to 25 years of consecutive registration.
Right.
But so, Justice Hardesty's question was, assuming that we said Megan's law applied, where would he be?
If Megan's law applied, he would have, at the time that we petitioned to terminate, he had registered in Nevada for 12 years.
So as a Tier 1.
As a Tier 1, that's correct. Mm-hmm. So, and the distinction between Megan's law and AB 579 is that Megan's law applies 15 years across the board, regardless of tier designation,
right,
as opposed to the scaled system under AB 579. So he would have 2 to 3 years of registration left.
And as a Tier 1 offender.
As under any tier offender, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. I have one last question, and since I'm in charge of the clock,
I apologize if I could just finish that
sure.
thought. But you noted that there were differences in registering as a Tier 1 offender versus a Tier 2 offender. So if we're not going to mix and match the statutes, when he re-registers, I guess, as a Tier 1 offender to finish the period of 15 years, he is registering as a Tier 1 offender. That was my question. His obligation would presumably be to fulfill those registration requirements expected of a Tier 1, not a Tier 2 offender.
That is correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, and I have one more question, and we'll give you a couple extra minutes to make up the shortfall here. There's some discussion, and I didn't look in the record, about whether or not the record established that your client had successfully completed a sex offender treatment program certified by the state or AG of the U.S., and the state drops a footnote contesting whether the record supports that. And I didn't see in your answering brief what you had to say on that. Perhaps you said something and I missed it. But was that in play in the district court, or did the state simply accept your representation that the paperwork shows he completed his training or treatment and was done with it, and there was no contest on that?
Your Honor, that was a topic of discussion. However, in his, and I apologize for not having a precise record site for you, but if you look at his initial application to the state when he moved to Nevada, it indicates that he completed 2 years of sex offender therapy. And that was also a topic of discussion at the hearing on the petition. The court did not require any additional documentation and it's unclear to me exactly what evidentiary documentation would need to be submitted to shore that fact
and
up.
Did you have a quarrel with the state about the adequacy of your proof on that point in district court?
Your Honor, unfortunately, because this case was a little bit far in time from it. I do not recall, maybe Ms. Brady will remember, we may have had some dispute about it, but the court found that he had established that he had participated in sex offender therapy as required by the statute.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I don't know how much time she has left, but could you add 2 minutes?
28 seconds.
Oh, okay. Please give her 2 minutes additional. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to briefly address some of the questions that were asked of Ms. Schell. So as far as the convictions in the record, the sites are JA 4, 16 through 17, and 45. That's where you can find those documents for the two convictions.
Do you maintain that one of them or that both of them were with minors, or do you agree that one of them was not?
I don't believe that we have adequate proof at this time as to one of the offenses. We do know that one of them was against a minor. We have, at the district court proceeding, the district court asked Mr. Neary if the other one was a minor, and he said no, and the district court took his word on that. But if this were to...
So the state didn't
concede.
Traverse that or contest it, that representation?
The state took the position that that wasn't enough.
That you introduced no proof to establish the opposite of what he said?
No, unfortunately, Mr. Neary was convicted in California, and it's quite difficult for us to get the California records, and the California records that he provided do not indicate whether or not the second conviction was for a minor.
Okay.
I also wanted to note that the way that this case is being handled is not an anomaly, as Ms. Schell would suggest. It's not that I'm doing anything different here. I handled this case in the exact same manner as I handled the Martin case, which is also available for this to this court. While there was inconsistency, it wasn't that one position was taken and stuck to until this case was brought. Cases were just being handled differently across the state. But I believe that this court, based on the law before it, needs to apply the laws as written. And I think it's very clear that Megan's Law was not intended to be commingled with Adam Walsh Act or vice versa.
Ms. Brady, may I interrupt you? if this court were to conclude that the error committed by the district court was evaluating this issue under the Adam Walsh Act instead of Megan's Law,
mm-hmm.
Would you agree that with the analysis, as I asked Michelle about it, or as she explained, that Mr. Neary would be required to complete his 15 years of registration as a Tier 1 registrant?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that he'd be required to complete the 15 years, and while I can't speak for the Department of Public Safety, while his registration, if he is required to register again, I don't believe that they would look at the gap in registration as anything involving his fault.
As you mentioned earlier, he was, during this time, in the registration itself, even though it may not have been published.
Right, yeah, the sex offender
when
registry.
When you say that, though, are you saying that you wouldn't count it as a gap, but would you give him credit for the period that he's been unregistered?
So I don't know that that's a determination that I could make. My
okay.
client would need to make that determination. I can speak as to the gap. I believe that would
Fair
be
enough.
Ignored.
I don't mean to press you on that.
No, I understand. The same question went through my head, but I didn't feel comfortable taking a position on that.
And I appreciate your candor.
Speaking to my client. And then... You were asking about the legal standards, and I just wanted to reiterate that I believe the legal standards are de novo, and I believe I've gone over time. So if you have any more questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments and your briefs. The matter will stand submitted and will be in recess until tomorrow.